Thank you very much, Ryan Burrow. Steve Bertrand here. It is Friday. We made it through a mildish week, or at least toward the end of the week, just in time for it to get really cold this weekend. Andrea Haines is here. She's the editor of Blue Sky Innovation for the Chicago Tribune. And Andrea, there's a lot to read this week. Welcome to the program.
Thanks.
All right, tell me about the, I got all kinds of things I want to run by you, but this comes out of a project you guys are working on, sort of an ideas week. Tell me about that.
It is. So we're, in addition to our usual content, we're doing 2 weeks of looking ahead at 2016. Many of the areas we cover, trying to pinpoint what's really coming this year, what can we expect to see, what sort of big advances, what smaller improvements, but just kind of setting the table for the year.
Right, and there are so many different areas of note, and I want to, well, let's just talk first. I told you my order, and I'm going to throw it out the window.
No
because
problem.
There was word came out today or yesterday that Chipotle is going to close for a brief period of time for retraining because they've had some trouble with sickened customers. So probably a good strategy. But you write about that. That's one of the things that is in development is this way, actually, that people can use their phone to check on the food they're about to eat. Now, that's hard for me to understand. Explain that for me.
It is. That's kind of a cool idea coming out of the sort of food tech space where we looked at what are investors investing in. In other words, what are they looking at, thinking potentially could work? And a Chicago investor, Chuck Templeton, who founded the company OpenTable, where we make our restaurant reservations, is now an investor in food type of businesses. And, you know, they're always a little vague about what they're looking at because they don't want to reveal too much. But they're looking at a company that will scan a food and give you information about it. So it would tell you potentially, you know, is this food safe? And other things. Like there's another company that they're invested in that will tell you if there's allergens in a food, things like that.
And this is comes out of Seed to Growth, right?
That's exactly.
That's what they put together to fund these new sorts of ventures.
Exactly. To make bets on exactly this type of idea.
Okay. So I can see where if you take a picture of an article of food or a piece of food and maybe you could learn about the allergens. But it seems like this app that you're writing about, you can take a picture of the food and see how old it is, right?
Yeah,
does that mean like wilted lettuce or something? Or?
Uh-huh. Some rely on food labels, which is maybe a little bit easier to understand. But some of the next generation stuff is going to actually look at the food itself and be able to tell you some of the qualities of the food.
So when I go to the state fair and order a corn dog, I can flash my camera at my corn dog and it's going to tell me to put it back.
Hope so. Maybe by 2017 for that one.
That's wild. All right, so we'll look for that. The other one that struck me or jumped out at me right away was this app or this venture called Parachute. And this comes from the woman who brought us Give Forward, correct?
Exactly. Desiree Vargas Wrigley is a founder in Chicago, recently left Give Forward, which is one of the early medical crowdfunding type of websites, and is now working on building a company called Parachute, which provides sort of an online platform where you can go and look at activities for kids, find activities for your kids. They're targeting children under 5 and just select and pay for classes that they would attend to do fun activities.
Right, but this isn't just a digest, right, or a clearinghouse. This is sort of a social club that they join.
In a way, they actually are providing a subscription service. In other words, you don't have to sign up and pay at every different location for every class. They're sort of consolidating that, serving it up online so you can browse, select, and pay using that kind of one-stop
shop. So you pay like $99 and you get 6 classes for the month or something like that?
Yeah, for their model is going to be $99 for unlimited classes for a month and then $79 for 5 classes a month.
And when these classes, these are like trips to the Children's Museum or what are they?
Definitely, a variety of sort of, you know, just things for kids, activities for kids, craft classes, that type of thing.
And they're starting just here, right? But they want to get bigger?
They definitely aspire to get bigger, but are starting in Chicago February 15th.
What, you know, how's the Innovation District doing?
We talked a little bit about the Innovation District a bit ago when Google landed there. So we look now with, you know, again, the year ahead, looking at, so now what? So Google's 600 employees are there. This is kind of the moment that people were waiting for in that area. They're there now. What's happening? So Google is settling in. They seem happy there, but they are hoping for a Walgreens or a CVS, which kind of cracked me up. Because
that's not right.
On a realistic basis, everybody needs that. But there are other things landing throughout the year. There's hotels coming in 2016 and early 2017, new restaurants,
well,
new
it is
offices.
Kind of funny that they want a Walgreens or a CVS, right? Because, I mean, it's understandable, but I'm interested in the idea that you can create a zone where people bump into each other on the street or at the Starbucks and sort of create, where you have someone from Google and then someone from, you know, maybe it's Parachute or something. They meet They form relationships, and that's what that's it's real social engineering sort of experiment that's going on there.
Definitely. It's definitely an attempt to get, you know, get those tech companies coming in, get the co-working spaces coming in, get all that talent kind of sizzling in the same area and, yeah, bouncing off each other. You want people to feel like they could get another job in the same industry and, you know, they can collaborate on things, they can share ideas. And so it is kind of putting those people together, and then they meet at the Walgreens or at the coffee shop or whatever, and they kind of bounce off each other.
So it's like the commercial. We've got someone with chocolate, someone with peanut butter. They crash into each other and
the ultimate innovation.
The rest is history. How's it going though? So there is more coming there, but I mean, I guess it would be a hard thing to measure.
Yeah, I don't know if there's any measurement at the moment, but there's just definitely growth. I mean, 600 employees even, you know, when you think about that area being pretty quiet, that's a lot.
Where are we talking?
So we're talking about 1,000 West Fulton, basically.
Okay.
That's where the Google building is. Swift & Son Steakhouse opened up in there. It's bustling.
So kind of west toward Ogden?
Exactly. Okay. It's you know, it's West Loop, but it isn't like necessarily the Randolph Road that was already getting developed. It's a little further west, and it's just, you know, it's pretty gritty still over there, but you can see a lot more happening. There's a lot more buzz there. And I think if you haven't been there in a while, you'd be surprised.
If you just walk down the street, do you see like little idea light bulbs all over going off?
Or? There's a few. There needs to be more. And I think that's what the hope is, that when you get things like a big hotel and, you know, other things and just more and more offices, we've named more and more companies that are going in there, they'll get some critical mass.
All right. So that's one of the things we'll look for. We just got a minute or so left. Scott Kleinberg will be here, your colleague from the Tribune. And we talk about what's new in social media and things like that. And he's going to talk about a new civics-minded app ahead of the election. But with all of that going on, you'd think that'd be a great sort of marriage, a collision of technology and politics. Has that really happened yet?
We did. So we looked at that, and maybe our expectations were too high because the Obama campaign led to such tech innovation. I mean, all you heard about was that technology and the great team that came out of there, centered on Chicago. Maybe that's a tough act to follow, but that was all 8 years ago, and we felt like this year there wasn't as much as we hoped. I mean, online voting would be the ultimate, right? Where we can literally vote from our smartphones. That's a ways in the distance.
Can my son vote? My son just turned 18. He can register online now, can't he?
You can register. There's, you know, one of the things that's bigger that might actually happen in Illinois this year is that people would be automatically registered when they get driver's licenses or state IDs.
I know there's a bill in Springfield for that.
Yeah, that's a bigger step maybe toward getting just more voters on the rolls.
Why not? If you're eligible, you should be able to vote. Andrea yep. Haynes, the editor of Blue Sky Innovation, thanks for coming by.
Thank you, Steve.
It's 12:22. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on this Friday afternoon. Steve Bertrand in. Thanks very much for tuning in. Hey, I hope you'll follow me on Twitter at Steve Bertrand, and also on Facebook. I've got a few pages. There's Steve Bertrand on books. There's Steve Bertrand. There's Steve Bertrand Travel. All of those on Facebook. So pick one. And I would imagine when Scott Kleinberg comes in from the Tribune, the social media writer, he'll tell me it's a bad idea to be so spread out that way. But there it is. I am. Hey, Tom Gimbel's on the phone, the CEO, founder of LaSalle Network. Tom, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Steve.
So this is the time of year, it seems to me, when there are a lot of corporate trade shows. I mean, we just had CES. That's kind of a big one, maybe not a great example. But a lot of times where guys and women are going off on, you know, different shows or different conferences and things like that. And, you know, I've never been in a career. I mean, I guess there are a few broadcasting conferences, but I've never been one of those guys who goes to them. From a distance, I look at them and I think, wow, what a monumental waste of time and a way to for people to put their feet up for a few days and not really have to do any work. How's that for a read?
I don't think you're far off.
Really? Okay.
I think there's a variety of reasons why people go. And the bigger the show, the more different groups of people you're going to have in different categories. But if you're going to go to it, you know, I mean, heck, there's everything from plumber shows to sales shows to medical shows. There's for everything. But there's also learning. So there's the actual trade show part where you're walking through and there's booths and people are trying to, you know, have you spin a wheel to win a prize and hear about their product.
Right, right.
And then there's the learning. And so a lot of them have breakout sessions where they have specialists in different areas that do sessions from 50 people to 500 people, and they have guest speakers. You can really learn a lot. And the key is to have a goal of 3, 4, 5 things that you want to accomplish when you're actually at the show.
All right, what percentage of people at the shows you think go with goals?
Oh, about one person. But I would say it's probably less than 10 or 15%.
Go ahead. I was going to say, I've seen some of your ideas and I like them. And one of the ideas is, you know, by the time you're done with this conference, do you have the names of four or five people who were really worthy of your time, who are going to be contacts for you in the future?
Yeah, and what most people do is they do the superficial introduction, meaning they're looking at people and they either go towards people, A, that they find physically appealing to them. And I'm not saying even from a dating standpoint.
No, I get
somebody, right? Somebody that is physically appealing to them, or somebody who is not that physically appealing and thus less intimidating. They usually fall in one of those camps of who they're going to talk to, and neither one are right or wrong. The key is, if it's not somebody that you're going to add value and want to have some sort of knowledge takeaway from, you got to get out of that and go find somebody else.
I like that, because you write, realize when you're wasting your time and cut it off.
Absolutely. It's because if you learn one thing, if you learn about a gym, I mean, this is, falls into the networking bucket. Who do you network with? And if you only do it in your city, in your business, and not at trade shows with people you can meet who are in totally different areas, network cities, you can exponentially expand your network this way.
I would imagine you're pretty good at this from what I know of you. So when you're in a room full of these conferees, how do you figure out the person to talk to?
You know, I'll be honest with you. I really used to do it the way I mentioned earlier, where I'd look at somebody and I'd say, do they have the right appearance for me? Are they polished? And then I realized there's buyers for everything and there's sellers for everything. And as my brother always says to me, there's 31 flavors for a reason, right? And sometimes you have to talk to people who aren't, your brain doesn't click with automatically from a distance.
Yeah, but how do you do that, Tom? How does that start?
You walk in and you see somebody and you walk up to them. Everyone has the same butterflies in their stomach, the same feeling of awkwardness, the same feeling of what not to say. Not everyone is Ned Ryerson from Groundhog Day, if I'm not dating myself with that reference, right?
That's coming up.
Very soon, very soon. So I think it's really looking and saying, I'm going to go up, I'm going to introduce myself, I'm going to find out, so what do you do? It's the first question you should ask. Hey, I'm Tom Gimbel. Nice to meet you. So what do you do?
Right. And so you also say that when you get that question, you need to be prepared for a succinct presentation in, 20 seconds, 30 seconds. This is what I do.
Absolutely. Have your, it's called an elevator pitch for a reason, because in an elevator you have a defined period of time. And so when you meet somebody, give them your elevator pitch. Listen, I'm Tom Gimbel. I'm CEO of a recruiting firm. We do national stuff. We're outside in Chicago, but we do national. What do you do? Quick, to the point, see what their response is.
And my response would be, you really wouldn't be interested. I don't know. I'm going to go over there.
Well, you listen to it and you say, you know what, terrific. It was great meeting you. And you invest the $100 in a lot of business cards. Right?
You know, yeah.
Bring the cards. Here's my card. I'm going to go work the room.
I think it's valuable advice, because truly, I mean, I'm kidding with you a little bit, but it's one of the things I'm just not very good at. And, as I do more and more, I dabble in this travel business, yep. I realize the value of, getting to that second level of conversation. And so I like your tips. I like your help. And I appreciate that. Tom Gimbel is the founder and CEO of the LaSalle Network. How do people find you, Tim? Tom?
You can call me anything you want.
That's why. That's why I'm so bad.
I follow you on Twitter. You can call me anything you want.
Okay.
It's at Tom Gimbel on Twitter and LaSalleNetwork.com.
I can see the weekend from here, Tom. Nice to talk to you. We're taking a break. Come back. Ryan Burrow will be here with a check of the news headlines. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thank you, Ryan Burrow. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. 12:37. Scott Kleinberg, also in the studio, writes about social media for the Chicago Tribune. Scott, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Steve.
All right. So, it wasn't long ago, I think maybe it was after Paris, and there was this talk about a crackdown on from Twitter and Facebook about sort of limiting the access that perhaps ISIS or others might have to these social media sites. And it's a huge argument. I don't know if there really is a resolution or if there's a way to do it.
Yeah.
But one of the things that came out this week is there's a family of a terror victim who is now suing Twitter.
Yes.
What's their argument?
Their argument is that Twitter knowingly allowed people with connections to ISIS or ISIS, you know, itself, to use the social network to spread propaganda. And it's, you know, legally, I'm not sure, but, you know, it's a fascinating argument because, you know, there are so many, you hear stories all the time about how many accounts are out there, whether it's people actually from the organization or people loyal to the organization spreading this stuff. And we know the way tweets spread. It's just amazing how many and how fast it goes.
So this was a defense contractor. I think he was from Florida.
Florida, yes, correct.
Killed in Jordan.
Yes.
Okay, but so maybe I, through Twitter, send you a message and we coordinate a car theft in the city of Chicago over the weekend. I mean, it's still a crime, yeah, right? And you can't hold Twitter responsible for that.
And that's exactly what Twitter's argument is. You know, we're working really, I think their statement was, working really, really hard to make sure this stuff doesn't get out there and, you know, work with as many law enforcement agencies as possible to stop it, and which makes sense because I'm sure that they're doing that. It's just that if anybody thinks that there's any way to stop a network that's so, you know, large, right, from all this stuff getting out there, it's going to be impossible.
Andrea Haynes was here earlier from Blue Sky Innovation, and mm-hmm, one of the things she talked about was this new app that she thinks is in development where you can actually hold your phone up to a piece of food and learn about its safety.
Oh, safety,
where it comes
nutrition
from. And Chipotle is sort of dealing with that this week, right? They announced, is it in February or that they're going to close for a few hours?
February 8th, they're going to close for a few hours. And it's so interesting because when the story came out.
Well, let me just tell. So they're going to close for a few hours because they've had these foodborne illness outbreaks. And so they're going to train their workers about cleanliness and things like that.
Right. That's exactly right.
Okay. And so now what was the reaction on social media?
Well, when the story came out, everything was Chipotle will close all stores on February 8th. Then they clarified it to say, wait, not permanently, February 8th for the day.
Did they really just say that?
Well, no. It's just that all these people were tweeting and saying Chipotle's closing down. So they had to come out and say, no, it's for the day to make it clear. And then when they did that, they made it clear to say a few hours. But nobody picked up on the few hours. Everybody's like, it's closing on February 8th. So depending on who you're reading, you know, you have people trying to spread the word to make it correct. But then you have all these people saying that it's going to close down and the rumors are spreading falsely. And it's just become this giant thing this morning.
You know, I threatened to do it a couple of weeks ago, maybe next week one day. I'm going to buy lunch for everyone.
Oh, how nice.
I'm going to bring in burritos because I just feel bad for Chipotle. I really do. I was talking to my daughter. She was home over break and she's like, yeah, my friends were out there boycotting it and, you know, and people are staying away from it. And, you know, the chances of any of us getting sick there are so minute.
Oh, sure.
And, you know, they're trying to do the right thing with locally sourced food, with in most cases organic food. I mean, it's a company that's trying to bring us into sort of the next century in a way.
Most definitely.
And I feel bad that they're being abandoned and now to find out they're shutting down on February 8th.
Yep. And and before this happened, before this whole, you know, food safety thing happened, Chipotle was always the darling of
Absolutely,
social media.
Right.
I mean, everybody just loved talking about it, posting their photos of food. You know, it was this great thing. And now, exactly to your point, everybody has just jumped on this bandwagon and it's just become spiraling. It's crazy.
What's their stock price? Prices was in the 450s, I think.
Yeah.
I know it's dropped a lot, but still a very high priced stock. And I'm pulling for them because I think we just do in this country to so many things. We overreact. I mean,
yes,
a reaction sometimes is warranted, but we overreact to things. And
you're talking about Chipotle?
Yeah.
I just came back into the room. I'll tell you that Chipotle shares are one of the few, very few, trading higher today.
Really?
Wow.
Up about 1.5%. But the price, the drop in share price from pre-E. coli to now is about 35%.
Wow.
Wow.
And what is it, like 450, 430 now? Where is it, Steve? Do you know?
I don't have the number
front
of me. No.
But so it's dropped 30%, and that would have been October-ish, I think, probably, or September, something like that.
Right.
Well, thanks for that. Yeah, that helps.
That's amazing.
So people are buying.
Yeah.
Anyway, so maybe Wednesday when you're in, we'll bring in burritos for everybody.
That sounds great.
Okay, Yun, you pay for that. tell me about this new dating app, Once.
Yeah.
Because, well, what was that kind of a, yeah, you sound skeptical.
I'm skeptical just because, you know, I wear my, this whole, it's about dating.
You wear your heart on your sleeve? That's what this is about.
Well, that really is what it's about. I mean, it's basically a dating app that's looking at your heartbeat to match people. And I wear my Apple Watch and the heartbeat is never accurate. So I just have to wonder.
How do you know the heartbeat's never accurate?
Because if you're exercising and you're working out really, really hard and it says your heart is beating 62 beats per minute, you know it's wrong. And then 30 seconds later, it pops up and it says 160, 170. So it takes forever to reach where it's supposed to reach. So it makes me wonder. I mean, it could be a different kind of technology and all that stuff. But
right.
It makes me wonder how accurate that type of thing can actually be.
So if it's that delayed, you could end up being set up with someone who you can't stand.
Exactly. Right? And 30 seconds before, I could have had the right person.
The reading just kicks in a little bit later. All right. So the idea is, though, they're going to present you with these profiles of people.
Yes.
You're going to be wearing a Fitbit or something.
Something along those lines, yeah.
And they're going to measure your heart rate. And if your heart skips a beat, so to speak,
yeah,
they're going to say, well, this is more likely a match for you.
Yeah, yeah. And right? and I think that is just such a cool idea. If you think about where we are with technology and where we are with dating services and all of that, that is just a great combination.
Although you're skeptical.
I am skeptical, yes.
Okay, so we got a couple more minutes. Election season's coming up. And again, Andrea and you were kind of married in several topics because we touched on this with her as well. But there's this Change Politics app that sort of is a kind of a plebiscite approach to the political agenda. Tell me about that.
Yeah, it's basically a website that lets you ask your questions to the candidates. Then people on this website will vote for the ones that are most popular, and the ones that are most popular will actually be submitted by the websites to the candidates to answer. Because their point is there are so many people asking so many questions. Some are great questions, some are ridiculous questions. There's no way in the world they're all going to get answered. They want to crowdsource something that basically says, okay, 2,000 people think this is a question you have to ask, so we're going to ask the question.
And the good news is that it might be sort of a marriage at the grassroots from people and the political leaders who have to answer to this.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, I went on the site and I was looking around. It's kind of new, you know, so there's not a lot of stuff on there. But there's more and more questions, you know, all the time. And you see 500-600 upvotes on a question. So you get an idea if that's the same thing that's on someone else's mind.
We've got time for one more quick one. NASA is looking for someone to handle their Twitter feed.
Yes.
Is that the sort of thing that my high school kid is qualified for?
You would think so. But NASA says you have to have a PhD or, quote, equivalent experience.
Is that to count to 140, or what's that about?
I think it's in case they discover intelligent life from another planet and we have to communicate. It has to be that.
So no kidding. NASA is advertising for someone to manage their social media.
Yes.
And one of the requirements is that you have a PhD.
Yes. Or close equivalent experience. It doesn't say what that is. But just the fact that people think, I mean, it's a challenging job, I can tell you, but PhD, not
right, it's your job. You do it, right?
Yes.
And you wouldn't qualify. You've had the equivalent work.
I have to have the equivalent work. I mean, I don't know for sure, but I have to.
I know there are a lot of parents out there saying, "I've got a kid with a PhD not doing anything." Scott Kleinberg, nice to see you again.
Good to see you, Steve.
You're listening to The Business Lunch. We're on 720 WGN. WGN 1252. You're listening to The Business Lunch. Here we are on 720 WGN. In Wisconsin, I love Wisconsin. It is so close to us, right? Just over the border, but in many ways it can be so far away as well. And as we try to highlight different jobs around the Midwest, I thought it might be good to head a little further north. Brett Alexander is on a phone line, and he is the boss at the Door County Ice Fishing Guide Service. Brett, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
All right, how did I do? Did I get the title and the name of your business correct? Because I've been a little off today.
Yeah, that's correct. It's Alexander Sport Fishing Guide Service, and we're up in Door County, Wisconsin.
So if people around Chicago haven't seen it, it's a pretty remarkable sight to drive by maybe Sturgeon Bay or Green Bay and see all of these shacks. I saw them for my first time up around the UP on Lake Superior, but these ice fishing shacks that go out, I guess there are a few around Lake Geneva here in Chicago, but nothing like you see out north. And you're the guy who rents these shacks to people who want to fish for a day or two.
Correct. We do a few different packages. We do shack rentals, just like you said, and we also do fully guided trips where there'll be a guide with the group for the day, and we'll hop around a few different areas and fish walleyes and whitefish. But yeah, we have we've got 26 shacks and 6 guides that work for our guide business. We got a pretty big operation here in Green Bay.
All right, Brett, I got to ask you, because when I think of a guide, I think of someone taking someone to a few different spots. You know, you're trailing someone or something like that. When it comes to ice fishing, that seems to be more of a stationary endeavor.
That's correct. It's, you know, we have the permitted ice houses out here, but we've got the ability. We have so many of them that we still will move from area to area. We'll just bounce different houses. So that's kind of how we roll out here, is we just hop around and try to hit different areas throughout the day. A lot of times we'll move 3 or 4 times in a day.
Have you got enough ice up there?
Well, today is actually my first day on the ice. So we're all sitting on about 7 inches of ice right now in Sturgeon Bay. And finally, we got that cold weather we needed to lock this ice up on Green Bay. And we got a little more cold weather coming here starting tomorrow, so we'll make a little bit more.
So you're on Sturgeon Bay right now?
Correct. I'm on the ice right now jigging whitefish.
All right. Have you had any luck so far?
We got about 45 so far. We've got a small group out today, and we got 45 whitefish, and we're going to fish walleyes this evening. So hopefully get a couple of big walleyes. A lot of people come up here to fish trophy walleyes. We have a lot of big fish up here. So
45 whitefish, that seems like quite a lot by 12:50 in the afternoon.
Yeah, it's not bad. So your limit is 10 per person, and I was done with my limit by about 10:30 this morning. So it's not too bad of a bite today. A lot of times, you know, it'll be a little bit quicker, sometimes slower, so you never know what you're going to get. You know, it's always cold fishing. So.
Brett, so I'm a guy who doesn't know what he's talking about, just so you know that, starting out. The idea of sitting on 7 inches of ice in, you know, kind of like a railroad compartment or something like that, and then turning the heat on, that all doesn't add up to me. That doesn't seem like the brightest thing to do.
Yeah, you know, if you don't know the ice, it can be spooky to people, but actually I drove about a 1,500-pound Ranger out here, and 7 inches of ice is actually pretty strong, and it can support quite a bit of weight.
You drove the pickup truck out there today?
Not a pickup truck, a Polaris Ranger crew cab, so okay. It weighs about 1,500 pounds, but our customers were having a walk out to these spots. So we'll walk customers out, but I'll drive and pull the shacks around just with myself and the machine on 7 inches. So
one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you was, first, you know, it's a bit of an oddity for us here in Chicago. But the other thing is something that's typical for you and anyone else who's trying to run a small business is the idea of customer service. I mean, whether you're selling them a bowl of chili or a chance to sit in a heated box and fish for whitefish, it's important to treat your customers well. I know that's important to you. So, you know, people probably don't think about that in a business such as yours, but how do you keep up the customer service, and how vital is it to your success?
I think it's, you know, the main reason for my success. I run probably the largest guide service in the state of Wisconsin, and I've always keyed in on customer service and just treating people right and, you know, good conversation throughout the day. And no matter what happens with the bite, you know, a lot of people still come back. You know, we have a lot of days where the bite's great and you limit out, but you get those certain days where the fish just don't cooperate. And I think if you take care of people, they're still going to come back and use your service. And that's what I've seen so far in my career.
All right. I don't want to talk about tragedy or anything, but have you ever been out there with the heater on and started to think, wait a minute, the ice is getting a little thin here?
Well, the main thing you want to worry about on a big body of water like this is not so much the thickness, you know, because I won't come out unless the ice is safe to support our weight. But it's the winds out here, so you really have to watch the winds, because what can happen is you can be out and a pressure crack can form, and if you get the wrong wind, you can go on a ride on a big ice keg, and then you have the Coast Guard come out and get you, and that's not a fun thing.
Tell me that again. I didn't follow all that, Brett. So the wind's blowing you, or...
Yeah, what'll happen is you get pressure cracks out here, and like today we got 40-mile-an-hour winds out here out of the northwest. We're fishing the east side of Green Bay, so the wind is actually pushing the ice this way, so we're safe. But if it was the other direction, I wouldn't be out here right now, just because the bay is not totally locked across. There's still open water pockets.
I see.
And when you get that, you can have that wind. There's so much force in the wind that it can blow and actually move big sheets of ice. So that's the main thing that you want to watch out here.
That's when you get to meet the Coast Guard.
All right.
Brett, it was wonderful to talk to you today, and I'm especially excited that you're out on the bay right now. So thanks very much for taking part of your workday to share it with us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Good luck. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN.